on the front line of freedom. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, visiting today with a man who has seen life for the last 56 years through a little different lens than most of us. For a 91-year-old, he has impressive upper body strength, and you can thank 56 years of wheeling himself around in a wheelchair for that. Frank Rigo is one of the elder statesmen of the Paralyzed Veterans of America. His injuries did not take place during his time in the U.S. Army Air Corps in World War II, or what had become the U.S. Air Force by the time he served in the Korean War. It came later on, and his experience has proven valuable to the servicemen who come home paralyzed from the wars our country is still involved in today. Frank lives in Phoenix, Arizona. He grew up north of there in Prescott, but when we left off, he was describing a much different setting, the aftermath of the atomic bomb dropped on Hiroshima. Frank went through on a train shortly before coming home from occupation duty in Japan at the end of World War II. And, of course, we're in the midst of the holiday season now, but 69 years ago, Frank wasn't quite sure he was going to make it home for Christmas, and he needed a little help from a motivated skipper and a future presidential candidate to pull it off. Let's jump back into the interview right there. The story of you coming back is a good one, and I'm sure, you know, we always learn something on this show. I'm sure most people don't realize that just because you sail back from the East to the States doesn't mean that there's a place for you to bring a ship in. And you mentioned coming on an escort carrier. I'm sure it would have been interesting just to see that carrier with all the Japanese planes on the deck of an American carrier. But there's a pretty good story with how you actually got to land that ship, because there were so many ships, not all of them could get a port to land on. Is that right?
Yes. In 1946, there was a lot of ships that were out at sea, 3 miles out of sea, anchored because they had no place to dock them to unload the troops, and a lot of them spent the Christmas out at sea. But I had a commander of the ship I was on told us, he said, I got a baby I've never seen in San Diego, and I got a friend, and he says, we're going to dock this ship somewhere. We were supposed to dock in San Diego. We ended up docking in San Pedro, and we got off the ship the 20th of December.
Anyone that flies in and out of Phoenix, I'm sure sees the Barry Goldwater Terminal here, and they remember him running for president. They know he was a senator from Arizona for a long time. And you got a flight because of him at one point. Tell me that story about Barry Goldwater and how he helped you out.
When I came home from the service, he was there in San Pedro, and he said, I'm from Phoenix, and he said, any veteran from Arizona, I'll fly to Phoenix for nothing. I just jumped on the plane with him and without even telling him that I was going until I came back.
So you had a couple of fortuitous turns there. The commander of that ship had some friends in high places to bring it into port, and then all of a sudden Barry Goldwater shows up to take you home. That was pretty special. You know, the other question that comes to mind for me, spending all that time on that ship with all those Japanese airplanes on the deck, did you ever get a chance to go nose around and look at those? Because I'm sure there was some curiosity.
We had very rough weather, and you couldn't stand on the deck because you'd be washed overboard. So I did see the planes, but we had rough weather coming all the way across, and the bow of that ship would almost take on water, and you didn't want to get on there because you'd get swept off. So the planes were there, and looked at them, and that's it.
Yeah, that would be good enough reason for me. When you think back about World War II now, and I know you went on to serve as well during the Korean War, but what makes you proud to be a World War II veteran? What do you take pride in? What do you think people should remember about you and your brothers and everybody else who served during that time?
I had the good fortune to go and lay the wreath on the World War II Memorial this Veterans Day. I was in Washington, D.C., and I met quite a few World War II veterans, but we're getting far and few between. If you're a World War II veteran, your minimum age is about 88 now, so we're going home to the Lord, and there's not much any of us left.
And I can see that makes you emotional. What was that like to lay that wreath? Because you're representing a lot of people when you do that.
A very moving situation. I represented the PVA, and by doing that, I had three photographers and a videographer follow me for an hour around the memorial. It was a very honor great honor to do that.
And you mentioned the PVA, and some people might not know what the PVA is. That's Paralyzed Veterans of America. Maybe some people can guess from the name, but why does that organization exist? You've been involved for over three decades. What is PVA all about, and what do people need to know about it?
PVA has existed since February of 46. After World War II, they brought all these veterans that were paralyzed, either from the neck down or from the waist down. And our organization is the only veterans organization that's chartered by Congress. We see that the veterans are getting the right medical care. They haven't found a cure for paraplegia. They're working on it, and our organization has spent millions of dollars to try and find a cure, but still haven't got to where we can walk. I've seen them computerized walking, but it takes about an hour to go 20 feet, so that's not walking in my book.
So basically the mission of the PVA is to make sure that paralyzed veterans are cared for, first of all, and that all the money that you raise, or the point of raising money, is hopefully to someday find a cure for that paralysis?
Yes, to find a cure. We also work with the spinal cord injury hospitals to see that the veterans get treated right and everything. And we have groups that make annual visits to all the spinal cord injuries. Like in California, go on Palo Alto, one in Long Beach, one in San Diego, one in Albuquerque, one in Denver. So they have certain hospitals that specialize in just treating paralyzed veterans.
I'm really interested in some of the interactions that you've had with other paralyzed veterans, but I think for people to understand the significance, they should probably have a taste of when you became paralyzed, because it wasn't your time in the service. Almost 60 years ago now. Tell me what happened. You were in a car with your father?
And there was three railroad tracks. And on the first two, there were freight trains parked. And then on the third line that we would have crossed was the main line. And there was a passenger train that was doing 55 in a 35-mile zone because he was behind schedule. The boxcars blocked the vision, and there was no signals or light there at all. The locomotive T-boned the 35 forward, and that's where I ended up paralyzed. For 3 days, they gave me up as deceased, and I fooled them, and I'm still here today.
Man, you don't hear that story every day. And your father was killed in that accident, so they think you're dead for 3 days. I can't imagine what it's like to come to, demonstrate to them you're not dead, but find out my father's dead and I'm paralyzed. How did you possibly deal with that realization?
First place, you're kind of doped up and everything, and you don't know what's going on. Then my brother, when I came to, he said, Dad got killed when he got hurt, and that's the first I'd known about it. And the engineer of that train was on his last run before retirement, and he knew me on top of it.
Where did this happen?
Right up in Prescott, right in town. And he was on his last run before retirement, and he didn't blow the whistle or anything. Yet the priest said the whistle was so loud it disrupted his mass that morning. It was on a Sunday morning. And what actually happened, when he seen me flying through the air, he recognized me, and then he lost it.
He come and visit you?
No, because after I came through, they sent me to Long Beach, California, which was a premier spinal cord injury unit. 11 months to the day I got hurt, I was home, and I've been home ever since.
I mean, there's so many questions that come to mind, because this is a long time. I mean, we're talking about, this is 56 years ago now that this happened. And I'm sure somewhere along the way, some doctors told you what they thought was going to happen. What was the prognosis for you? Give me some examples of some of the things doctors have shared with you or told you to expect that somehow you've overcome and you're still here at 91.
Well, I first got hurt, and I was over there, and I seen all these guys were paralyzed, mostly from the war. I asked the doctor, what's my prognosis? How long do you think I'm going to live? He said, you'll live a good 3 to 5 years.
You've been paralyzed from, what, the waist down since 1958?
It hasn't gotten any better. It hasn't gotten any worse.
Well, but that's the physical challenge. I've met enough people that have gone through this. And it, in fact, just a few weeks ago, Johnny Erickson Tata was at my daughter's school and spoke. And she's such an advocate for people with disabilities and people dealing with paraplegia or even quadriplegia. It seems that there is an even bigger sometimes emotional and mental battle that you have to fight. And clearly you've been able to win for all these years. How do you do that? What keeps you going for all these years, considering what you were facing?
Don't dwell on the things you can't do, and make the best of what you can do. And that's been my theory. Don't feel sorry for yourself because you in the condition you're in, but do the best of it and don't give up.
And I hear you say that, and I have to believe you. But I imagine there are probably some times where that wasn't very easy. Were there some times where you felt like this was just too much, or you couldn't do this anymore?
No, I've never had that feeling. Tomorrow's always a new day. I mean, being paralyzed is a big trauma, but now that I look back, being blind or being deaf is worse than being paralyzed, as far as I'm concerned, because you can't hear or see the beauty of the world. New injuries, when I talk to them, I tell them, don't dwell on the things that you can't do. Do the things that you can do and do them the best of your ability. And don't lay there and feel sorry for yourself, because it's not doing you any good and nobody else cares.
Because I could go to a guy who just got blown up in Iraq or Afghanistan and tell him the same thing that you just said. It wouldn't mean that coming from me. It wouldn't mean as much. But when it comes from you, someone who's lived for over a half century with paralysis, I'm sure it means something. How many times do you think you've had the chance to talk to one of these paralyzed veterans?
When I was in the hospital this last time, a nurse came to me and said, I got a new injury here. Will you go talk to him? And I said, I'd be glad to. And just help another soul. Let him know what he's facing, and then let him know what he can do about it. You're just trying to help the individual by mentoring to him and saying, these things you can't do, don't dwell on them, and the things you can do, enjoy them.
What do you think we need to know about these veterans who come back in that kind of condition, who you're trying to encourage? What can we do to support them and not make things more difficult for them?
I think you can encourage them, and don't feel sorry for them. They've gone through enough of that, as far as I'm concerned, the way I felt. Don't remind you of it. Encourage them that life is still worth living.
It occurs to me that you served our country in World War II and Korea, but you've probably served a whole lot more of our veterans in all these decades since. What are you most proud of? What gives you the most satisfaction?
I'd have to think about that. There's so many things. I raised two stepchildren, and one of them put 20 years in the service, and the other one is an attorney, and they're still here in Phoenix with me, and I've had a good life.
And it doesn't seem like you're done yet. What keeps you going? What are you still looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to tomorrow. You never know what's in store, and just keep going, and that's the way I feel about it. I'm not ready to check out yet.
Well, we're not ready for that either. Are there things that you would say you've learned because you've had to live with paralysis that you might not have learned or understood otherwise?
Oh, yes, I think that's very true. I mean, the way of life and everything, I mean, it changes your life upside down, and you have to learn to get along with it. And society has done a lot of improvements, say for the paralyzed veterans, but also it's helped the civilian population. You take like a person that can't pick up his feet real, that shuffles. They got curb cuts where they couldn't cross the street because of the curb, or a mother with a baby carriage. We've accomplished a lot of things that we fought for ourselves, but it's been a blessing to everybody else.
Well, I'm glad you pointed that out to us, because I'm sure a lot of people have not realized that. We just kind of take it for granted, and there are so many things that are a result of the work you and the Paralyzed Veterans of America have done. There's a good parallel, too, there to what you did in World War II in Korea, because our lives would not be the same. Our country would not be the same without your service and sacrifice. And I'm sure that people, paralyzed or otherwise, have been inspired by hearing you share your outlook. That's Frank Rigo, 91 years old, of Phoenix, Arizona. If you want to see what he looks like, pull up Hometown Heroes on Facebook or go to hometownheroesradio.com. You're also going to find online some info on the spot that we're going to visit when we come back. I'm going to take you to the giant side of Texas, as they call it, where you can explore a chapter of World War II history that a lot of people don't even know about. How could you be a World War II pilot without a propeller? Some of you are figuring that out right now, and we'll explain when Hometown Heroes comes down the home stretch right after this.